Good morning and happy Father's Day. Lisa and I were married 43 years ago, and we decided that we would start our family after we were married 5 years. We wanted to have our first child when we were married 5 years, and we jumped the gun a bit. We got a little excited and had our first child when we were married 4.5 years, and I just was so excited to be a dad, and we wanted to have another child, we were pretty sure, and we had decided on April of 83 that instead of having them 2 years apart, like was our plan, that we would have them 5 years apart. And God said, no, you're having them 2 years apart. She was already pregnant when we made that decision. We didn't know it yet. And the first two boys are 2 years and 18 days a difference in age. And somewhere around the time I was in my early 30s, Lisa convinced me we were having no more children, but she didn't convince God. And about the time I was 39, the last one, pretty sure it's the last one now, came along. And he was such a blessing. It was so wise of God to give us that child. We didn't know we needed him so bad. 17 years ago, my daughter-in-law, Jen, laid a baby in my hands and said, "Grandpa." And I was like, "Oh, I'm a grandpa." That was so wonderful. Six more times since then, my daughter-in-laws, Sophia and Jen, have laid babies in my arms and said, "Grandpa," again. So we have seven of those. It says in Psalm 127:3, "The children are a heritage from God. Offspring, a reward from him." So true. But they lay the baby in your arms, and when they put him in my arms all three times, well, not right away with Austin because they took him off to the NICU. He was kind of early. But at some point in the hospital, I would pace the floor and sing a silly song to them about all the stuff we were going to do and just ecstatic to be a daddy. And I also had I had 6 years of their birthday gifts picked out, 6 years of their first 12 years of life. I knew what I was getting them for their birthday. I didn't know what I was doing, though. It was a little scary. So the question was, now what? I want you to turn with me to Ephesians 6:4. That's the verse we're mainly going to be looking at today, but we're going to be hopping around a bit. And the verse in Ephesians 6:4, and at this point in Ephesians, he's giving like one verse or two sentences each to tell you how to deal with different relationships. A lot on relationships at the end of chapter 5 and then in chapter 6. But he says in verse 4, "Fathers, do not exasperate your children. Instead, bring them up in the training and the instruction of the Lord." In Colossians 3:21, there's a similar verse, and Paul says, "Fathers, do not embitter your children, or they will become discouraged." We got these babies in our hands and wondering what in the world to do with them. I was Austin, our youngest, who is 24, will be 25 soon, and is married. But when he got his first car, he was given a Saturn. And one day in the driveway, I noticed there was water dripping underneath the car, a pretty steady stream. And I looked in there and I said, "Man, you got a leaking water pump." And Traverse engine, it's sideways in the engine compartment. And they leave about enough room in the engine compartment to stick a piece of paper down through there. And I'm looking at this and the water pump's on the bottom. And I said, "Austin, this is going to be murder, this job. I don't know, maybe we should take it and have it done somewhere, because we're going to be all day tearing this car apart. We're going to have parts everywhere because that water pump's on the bottom, and we got to dig down through all the parts to get to it." Thankfully, he has a brother, Micah, who is very mechanical and is on YouTube quite a bit, and he found a video of how to replace the water pump on the Saturn. And what you do is you don't kill yourself going down through the top of the motor to get to the water pump. You jack the car up, remove the inside fender liner, and you just take it off and put the new one on. Nothing to it if you know what you're doing. if you have the right instructions and you know what you're doing. It just reminded me, as we're looking at this about parenting, that in Proverbs 14:12, it says, there is a way that appears right to a man, but in the end, it leads to death. In Proverbs 3, it says, for the Lord detests the perverse. And he says, for the Lord detests the perverse, because he's talking about perverse things people do that you're not to be a part of before this verse. And he says, for the Lord detests the perverse, but takes the upright into his confidence. Meaning that he's going to share with us, he's going to confide in us how to live life, not to live the life of a fool, not to live the life of a perverse person. But the thing is, with raising children, there's not a 10-step verses in the Bible. There's not 10 verses you can say, you do this, you do this, you do this, and go through those 10 steps, and you will raise great kids. There's no list like that. So what does it mean not to exasperate or embitter your children? Good question. I want to say first, though, I was in a boat with Austin in the Everglades, and I highly recommend any kind of water displacement device to get out with your children, because you are stuck, they are stuck with you for hours at arm's length. And Austin said to me, this is several years ago, he said, Dad, would you like to be 27 again? I said, no, I don't want to be 27 again. He said, well, if you could be 27 again and know what you know now, would you do things differently? I said, enthusiastic, yes. If I could know now that then what I know now, I would do things a lot different. If I were to write down all the things I would do differently, I'd wear out boxes of pens using reams of paper, spilling piles of tears over it as I dehydrated myself crying, listing the things that I would do different if I could live over again. In Lamentations chapter 3, verse 22 through 23 will be familiar to many of you. It says, because of the Lord's great love, we are not consumed, for his compassions never fail. They are new every morning. Great is your faithfulness. What's that got to do with parenting? Many of us have failed in many ways. And that's, I always get a kick out of people say, they'll talk about their father and they'll say, he wasn't a perfect man, as if that needs to be said. I think you can just say, he was a man, and everybody go, oh, he wasn't perfect. They'll figure that out, because there is no perfect man. It may be late. You may not have little ones. Your kids may be much older, and it may be late in the game, but it's never too late to start being a good dad. I had a friend that he was in his 60s. I don't remember exactly how old he was, but I don't know. We got in a deep conversation one day. He was a difficult person. He was loud. He was rough around the edges, and he was untrustworthy, but I liked him. I just knew when not to trust him. Financial things mainly. But he's gone now. But he told me that his father, when his father was in the hospital dying, that as a grown man with his own children, my friend and his brother went in to the hospital and asked their father to please say, I love you, before he died. And he refused to say it. And I thought, the influence of a father on his children goes way beyond the diapers or the toddlers. My father was influencing my life. He lived till he was 90 years old, and he was still influencing my life. Even the secular world recognizes, is starting to recognize, actually, the study of fatherhood is a recent study that, you know, there's a lot of people studying it now, the effects of a father. You know, always felt like if you look in Hollywood, you look at Hollywood and movies and shows and stuff, father was an expendable thing. He really wasn't necessary. He was just there to procreate, but he really wasn't worth much anything else. But they have something they call the father effect. If you look at different studies, and I'm not going to cite the studies because I'm just grabbing a couple things from different studies, but they found that there's something called the father effect. The world knows that there's benefits to having a father in the home. One of the things they found is kids who have a present and engaged father are less likely to drop out of school or wind up in jail compared to children with absent fathers. When kids have close relationships with their father figures, they are less likely to engage in high-risk behavior. Good news is, if you're not in the home, children can still benefit from a father that's engaged with his children. When his children know they are loved and they have a relationship with their father. Children with a father in the home are more likely to have higher paying jobs and healthy, stable relationships when they grow up. They also tend to have a higher IQ test scores by the age of 3. They endure less psychological problems throughout their lives when fatherhood is taken serious. Fathers have an incredible opportunity to mold the lives of their children. Incredible. That's a gift to us, to have that from the Lord, that we can have that kind of input in their children's lives. I have a friend also that had a difficult relationship with his father, and I only knew him as an adult, met his father a few times. But he would say to himself, my friend would say to himself about his father, my friend was thinking of making a decision, he would think, what would my father do? And then he would do the opposite of that. He'd try to figure out how his dad would handle the situation, figure that was wrong, and would do something different. So we have an incredible influence on our children for good and bad. Let's do it for good. I was recently talking to some parenting experts. They're experts on fathers. And I asked them, what makes a good dad? And they all said, there was 3 of them. They said, a good dad does stuff with his kids. I said, okay, that sounds good. What kind of stuff? And they said, well, good dad will take our RC cars and take us to the park, and we all drive together the RC cars. I said, okay. Then one of them piped up and says, yeah, and he'll make a potato cannon. You don't know what a potato cannon is, I'm sure, but you make it out of PVC, and it's pressurized, and you put a potato in it, and you pull a handle, and it shoots a potato like a rocket. So these experts in parenting thought that a father who would make a potato cannon with them was a pretty good father. He also makes dry ice bombs. And I'm going to say right here, I don't know if that's a good part of fathering. I've seen those things go off, and I'm not endorsing that. I'm just telling you what the experts told me. One of the experts said, and he'll take your spinner and take a compressor and make it spin so fast he lets it goes flying across the street. I hadn't known that these were fathering things that a good father does, but he spends time with me, is what one of them said. One of them said to me that a father prays with me and makes me feel safe, a good father. Then the oldest one of these experts, who is almost 17, told me that a good father would be like the guy in 1 Timothy 3, 2 through 7, which is the qualifications for a pastor. The overseer, the pastor, is to be above reproach, faithful in to his wife, temperate, self-controlled, respectable, hospitable, able to teach, not given to drunkenness nor violent, but gentle, not quarrelsome, not a lover of money, and he must manage his own family well and see that his children obey him, and he must do so in a manner worthy of full respect. He must also have a good reputation with outsiders, so that he will not fall into disgrace and into the devil's trap. Those are my grandkids, of course, that were telling me what a good grandfather is. But it's good to listen to them. I asked my sons, I said, what if you were preaching on Father's Day, what would you say to people? And Micah said to me, he said, well, I would say yes to your children as much as is possible because you're going to have lots of opportunity to tell him no. And that's good advice. I talked to my son Jordan. I texted my son Jordan. He's 8,400 miles away, so we're like right now. Jordan and his family are 1 o'clock in the morning where they are on Monday. But he texted me, and he said, "It's hard to imagine that God really loves us unconditionally, but it's easier to imagine a father that longs for the love of his child despite their actions." And that is what a father can show their children, is they can show them the love of God, the unconditional love of God. Then we had a discussion, a little texting discussion, about something that is very near and dear to me. And that is, I think, one of the most important things that you can do for your children as a father, and we're going to discuss more. I'm not going way off track here, but is to one of the best things that you can do for your children is to love their mom. Is to love their mom. In fact, I saw Micah this morning. My son had sent me a message that he knew growing up that I loved mom more than him, and he was okay with that. I want to say to you, even if you're not with their mom anymore, that you can still love her, and that's beneficial to your children. You don't have to stop loving somebody because you're not with them. But what does it mean to exasperate children? Because that's what it says in Proverbs 6:4. Don't exasperate your children. What does it mean to exasperate them? The word used for exasperate also has the definition of anger or enrage them or provoke them to wrath. Based on how often when I talk to children, they say that the most important thing that a good dad does is spend time with them, that came up on every child. And I think it will come up on every child that they'll say they think spending time is a very important thing. I would say that not spending time with your children exasperates them. They want that. Another thing that would exasperate your children is unclear or unrealistic expectations. You know, we have unrealistic expectations a lot on the children because we think that they come into this world as a clean slate and that, you know, they're just going to be this perfect little child if we do everything right. That's unrealistic expectation. I think another thing that exasperates children is unclear expectations or rules. And I had a situation in my life where, and I've mentioned it before, I think, from the pulpit, but I had a fight with Micah when he was a teenager about something. And I wasn't being clear about what the rules were or what I expected of him. And it escalated pretty quickly. It was kind of scary because now he was getting big and strong. He wasn't a little kid. And we're veins out of our necks and fists clenched. And we're arguing. And after we cooled down a little bit, he came to me with a pencil, a pen, and a piece of paper. And he said, "Dad..." And he laid it in front of me. He goes, "Write down what the rules are. I don't care what they are. I just need to know. I just need to know what they are." So I had exasperated my son by not being clear about the expectations. Now, they exasperate me sometimes when I was very clear about the expectations and they didn't obey it. That happens too. But it's so important for the parents to be clear about what you expect of them. We used to have a thing on the chart. I've wrestled with saying this. It was called a SWAT chart. And what it was is things you could get swatted for. And they had different things. And you go to the fridge, you go, "Oh, you did this." There it is. You know, they had rules. They knew that if they did certain things, they were going to pay certain consequences. So it's very, very important to have clear expectations or rules. Another thing that exasperates children is to be compared to another child. I remember when Micah was born. He was born in December. He was 7 pounds and he was 19 inches long. And Jordan was born 2 years later. He was 7 pounds, 19 inches long. And their crib photo, when they're first born, you can't tell them apart. I can, but they look pretty similar. That's because I know which pictures are which. That's why I can tell them apart. But they were so identical. And I think, I didn't check with Lisa, but I think it was just a couple of days even before she got out of the hospital. Because back then, she had a cesarean, you know, they kept you forever. Now they send you right home. But before she got home, she said, I have realized that this child is completely different than the other child. And then we had Austin, and we realized you never get a duplicate. They're all different. You know, they all have different ways. I said about Micah when he was growing up, and still to this day, when my son Micah, if we get together, we're going to talk each other's ear off to the point that his wife and my wife say, we feel like we're not even in the room when you two are together, because we're just having a great time talking about all kinds of stupid stuff, cars, boats, and things like that. And Jordan, I always said with Jordan, I had to take him fishing to get him to speak to me. And it took a while. We had to spend some time together, and then he'd open up to me. And sorry, Austin, but I always say about Austin, I'm still waiting to see what will work with him. It's not exactly true, but they're different. They're different. And if you put the same expectations on all of them, you're going to exasperate them. And if you compare them to their brother or their sister, I know there are sisters out there. I have all boys, but I know other people have girls. If you compare them to their brother or their sister, you're going to drive them nuts. You're going to embitter them, and you're going to discourage them by expecting too much of them. Another thing that would drive kids crazy is do as I say, not as I do. Now, I don't know anybody that actually says that, although I have heard that saying, do as I say, not as I do. But as parents, we can live that way. We want our kids to be up to a standard that we ourselves don't hold ourselves to. We want them to be honest when we're just not always completely honest. Hypocrisy drives kids crazy. That will exasperate them, hypocrisy in their father. And being harsh or unforgiving. Your children should never feel that you're, I mean, they're going to feel like you're harsh sometimes because you have to punish them, but you should never actually be harsh to your children. And forgiveness should pour out of you like water on your children. Mercy should be available anytime, day or night. I used to say that to our boys when they were teenagers. I said, if you ever find yourself at a party and you know you shouldn't be there, you call me and I'll come get you. No questions asked. And then they'd spill milk on the table. And I'd, yeah, spill milk on the table. And I'd yell at them. I was like, sure, they're going to call me from the party. I get mad when they spill milk. But don't be harsh. Don't be unforgiving. Now, not exasperating your children does not mean that you don't discipline them. It says in Proverbs 19, verses 18 and 19. Discipline your children, for in that there is hope. Do not be a willing party to their death. A hot-tempered person must pay the penalty. Rescue them, and you will have to do it again. He says, discipline your children, for in that there is hope. If you discipline them, there's hope for your children. Do not be a willing party to their death. You don't discipline your children, it's like you're sending them off to their death. You literally are. If you don't discipline them in the ways of the Lord, you are sending them to their death. He says, a hot-tempered person must pay the penalty, rescue them, and you will have to do it again. That speaks to letting your children suffer some consequences for what they do. A parent that constantly bails their child out will have to bail them out their entire life. I've often said that if you discipline early your children, you don't discipline long. If you don't discipline early, they'll beat you the rest of your life. hot-tempered person must pay the penalty. Rescue them, and you'll have to do it again. You don't want to be rescuing your children from every eventuality of their choices. You want them to suffer some of their choices. I had a friend that his son was arrested for possession of marijuana. This is many years ago. He was arrested, and the son called and wanted to bail him out. And he says, no, I'm leaving you in jail for the weekend. And the son will say that's the best thing he ever did to, his dad ever did to him. He left him in jail all weekend. And he said that was a turnaround for him. The rest of the verse, it says, don't exasperate your children, but rather it gives you something else to do. So we're not going to exasperate them. We know not to do that. But bring them up in the training and the instruction of the Lord. The training and instruction, some of the verses, some of the versions you have say nurture and admonition. The word for training or nurture is defined in the original language as disciplinary correction, instruction, or chastisement. And instruction is, the definition is, or admonition is in some of the versions, is calling attention to something, a mild rebuke or warning. So we're teaching and warning our children. That's what we're supposed to do, teach them and warn them. In Deuteronomy 6, this is a very famous passage. It's written to Israel, and he says to them, to the Israelites, in verses 4 through 9 of Deuteronomy 6, he says, "Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your strength. These commandments that I give you today are to be on your hearts. Impress them on your children. Talk to them when you are sit at home and when you are walking along the road and when you lie down and when you get up, and tie them as symbols on your hands and bind them on your foreheads and write them on the door frames of your houses and on your gates." If you've had, I don't know if girls do this so much, but if you've had boys, at some point you will walk into a room and you'll hear one of them crying, usually the smaller or the younger one. You'll hear them crying and you'll walk in and the older one will be holding like a fire truck in his hand with a look on his face like, uh-oh, and the little one will have a little scratch on his head. And so, what happened? He hit me with a fire truck. Or whatever other object is handy. Sometimes it just shove you into a wall or something. I'm talking little kids. I'm not talking big kids. If you've been through that, I'm sure you have if you have kids, and you say to them, I ask them, why did you do that? And guess what the answer is? I don't know. That's what they say. I don't know. I just smashed him. And you just see little children beating on other children. Or if there's a group of children and they notice one child smaller, he'll get shoved. I mean, they just, it's so natural for them. Psalm 58:3 is up on the screen. It says, even from birth, the wicked go astray. From the womb, they are wayward and spread lies. Well, my little baby's not wicked. I mean, he's not wicked. David said in Psalm 51:5, he said, surely I was sinful at birth. Sinful from the time my mother conceived me. Kids, precious little babies, newborns, come pre-wired to be sinners. We don't have to teach it to them. I always get a kick out of people say, hate is taught. I said, no, we do that naturally. I mean, it can be taught. Obviously, there are some places where it can be taught, but we learn to hate naturally. It's pre-wired in us. It's natural. It does not have to be taught to the children to be sinners. So you're supposed to raise your child up in the instruction of the Lord. The greatest need that your children have is for them to know the gospel. That's the greatest need they have. They need to know that God is holy and they are not. God is perfect and we are not. That we are sinners and have offended God. Because he's holy, he must punish our sin. That he sent Jesus, his perfect son, to pay the price for our sin, to substitute for us. And he poured out a punishment for our sin on Jesus. And by faith in Jesus' death, burial, and resurrection, we can find forgiveness of sins, and we can spend eternity in heaven. And that the price for not doing that is eternity in hell. If we don't get that across to our kids, we have failed. You're supposed to be their protector. I always say it's the three P's. Protector, provider, and priest. That's what you're supposed to be for your children. The protector, the provider, and the priest. There's not a loving father that would not protect his family. I saw a video of a buffalo charging a family in Yellowstone. And the father and mother ran, and the little girl was left behind, and she got picked up and flung by the buffalo. And I thought, that poor dad, I'm sure in the heat of the moment, you know, he didn't do it on purpose. But for the rest of his life, he's going to hurt in his heart for having left it. She's okay. But he's going to hurt for having run off and left her in the danger, that he didn't protect her. But most fathers are going to do whatever they have to do to protect their children. What kind of father would not provide for his children? There are some that don't. But by and large, a man is going to be a provider for his family. It says in 1 Timothy 5:8, anyone who does not provide for their relatives and especially for their own household has denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. That's pretty harsh, that if they won't provide, they're like an unbeliever. A father will find answers to his parenting questions as he searches the Bible for wisdom. This is not going to be today a list of do this, do this, do that. We don't have that. But as you search the Bible, like you're mining for treasure, you're going to find the answers to your parenting questions. In Proverbs 10:1, it says, a wise son makes his father glad. And if you have children, you shake your head. You know that when your son or your daughter does something wise, when they're acting wise, it is such a joy to you to see them doing the right things. As a Christian father, as a Christian parent, to see your children living a life that would be pleasing to the Lord and being wise in godly wisdom is just such a blessing to have. It says in Proverbs 2, 1 through 5, I think that's up on the screen. My son, if you accept my words and store up my commandments within you, turning your ear to wisdom and applying your heart to understanding, indeed, if you call out for insight and cry aloud for understanding, and if you look for it as silver and search for it as hidden treasure, then you will understand the fear of the Lord and find the knowledge of God. In the beginning, I told you about Proverbs 3, I think it's verse 32. I forgot the verse number, but it says that the Lord takes the godly into his confidence. This is what he's promising. If you will search it out, if you will search out wisdom, he'll be more than happy to share it with you, and you will find the answers to your parenting questions. You know, there's a lot of good books that have written. There's a lot of good people that speak on parenting. I would suggest that you avail yourself of people that you know that have successful families. Ask them what they did, but also always measure against what the Bible says about being a parent. I read once. I saw the Proverbs 31 woman. The woman every woman loves to hate, the Proverbs sort of the perfect woman. We know she doesn't really exist because if there was a perfect woman, she would have no man for her. There would be no man sufficient because there's no perfect men. But it's a beautiful thing that's written to a king telling him how to what to look for in a wife. And I saw that somebody put on Facebook, it said, if you want your wife to be a Proverbs 31 woman, then you need to be a Proverbs 1 through 30 man. Actually, there's a book that's got a title something like that. Our fathers, I'm going to speak to again, our sons and daughters, whether they are newborn or 60 years old, are watching to see how our faith in Jesus affects how we live this life. They're watching. They're watching. I remember watching my father-in-law and mother-in-law as they were struggling through Alzheimer's and illness and just difficulties. And I just remember wanting to see them finish well. And through the difficulty of Alzheimer's, he did, my father-in-law did, finish well. But even then, I was looking, I wanted to see their faith, what their faith meant to them as they were reaching the end of life. So no matter how old your kids are, they're looking to you. They're looking to you for to see how your faith affects how you live your life. Because if you want them, if you're telling them this is how they ought to live, this is how you've instructed them their whole life, they better see that in your life, or it's not going to fly. It doesn't fly. If it's not in your life, it won't be in theirs, possibly. But you want to give them the right picture. I remember my son Jordan one time came to me, and he said I was being short with Lisa while they were visiting. And he said to me, Dad, I want to talk to you. And he pulled me aside. He goes, Dad, you're not treating mom nice. And that's, you don't do that to my mom. He was saying, that's not the picture that I want to see. Show me the picture I'm supposed to see. And he's an adult with two children. And he told me that. He said, he's saying, Dad, give me the right picture. Let me see the truth. Does a dad obey God just when things are not too terribly inconvenient? Does a dad obey God except cross some things out? Or do you just obey God when it's difficult, when it's hard? I've told my sons growing up, I said, stand up for what is right, do what is right, when you're the only one standing up for doing what's right. And that's going to be often and more often in this world. Dads, if we want wise and godly children, spoken of in Proverbs, we need to be the wise and godly men that are obedient to God, obedient to Him, to produce the kind of good fruit in our lives and in the lives of our daughters and sons that would please God. So we're supposed to not exasperate our children. I suppose most of us have had an experience where we've exasperated them, so we know exactly what that looks like. Cut it out. Don't do it. And we're supposed to raise them in the instruction, admonition of the Lord. And we need to be diligent about that. As we walk with them, as we sit in a boat with them, as we're sitting around the table, whatever we're doing, we need to be diligent to share the truths of God, because your most important thing is that your child would put their faith in Jesus Christ. Because if you did everything else, if they had a great job and they had a beautiful family and they had all that they ever wanted and they died and went to hell, you've lost. Doesn't matter what great things happen in this life if you die and you don't have Jesus Christ. So let's do that. I'm going to encourage you to start today. I'm going to encourage you to start today if you're 30 or if you're 80 or 90. It's never too late. In God's economy, He never has a point where He says, no, you can no longer be kind, you can no longer love, you can no longer obey me. As long as you're breathing, you have that opportunity to do that and to love your children. Let's pray. Father, I thank you for a godly example in my life, my father, that loved us and was so kind to us that it makes it easy for me. And I know it's not that way for everybody. So God, I pray that men today would take to heart the truth of how you want them to be as fathers. God, I pray that they would take to heart and they would change, that families would be saved, that families would be restored, that children could sleep at night. God, I pray for healing and pray for obedience. And God, I thank you for your mercy, because we're going to mess up. We're going to do things wrong. And I thank you that you're merciful. God, pray that we would be merciful to those we love also. And I thank you that you have not left us wondering and wandering in this world, but that you've given us your word that we can look through and mine and find the keys to life and find the treasures that you have for us in a life of obedience. Thank you, God. In Jesus' name, amen.